On today's episode of The Good Word, Gary Washburn joins us as we talk about the Game 7 between the Nuggets and Timberwolves. What's next for the New York Knicks and their hard-driving head coach? Of course, we talk about the Boston Celtics and their run, and we preview both conference finals. All that and much more coming up on today's episode.
Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports. Ball don't lie. And here is Vince Goodwill.
This is for either one of you guys. And usually in NBA history, it says you have to lose and lose big before you win. What is it about this team that says
we lost last year?
Yeah, but that's different. You have to lose at a bigger stage. Usually, teams. Usually
it's the playoffs. We lost last year.
We lost the last 2 years.
God damn! How much more we got to lose?
Yeah, how much you want us to lose?
We're losing for 20 years.
I mean, that's just the truth, dog.
God damn!
Welcome to Comedy Hour. Because clearly, Carl Anthony Towns and Anthony Edwards like making fun of very reputable questions from media members. Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, host and senior reporter for Yahoo Sports. We are part of the Ball Don't Lie Network. Get us wherever you get your podcast. It is Monday. I am back home. I am no longer in Denver because I took a red-eye flight that had a two-hour delay. So I feel like if there's one person that can relate to going viral in the press conference and the same dude that can probably, you know, relate to me a little bit as far as these red eye flights, my man Gary Washburn, senior writer for The Globe and Celtics writer. G, how you doing, man?
So, Vinny, so how did you get on a red eye flight and the game ended at what time local? How did that go? Was you OJ running through the airport?
Wow. Are we allowed to say that name? I guess we go find out.
This is the airport reference though. Not the air, just the airport reference. With somebody going, go Vinny, go. How did you make that flight?
In case you don't know, Gary, I'm a very quick writer. So I pounded out my piece. Like, the game ended, around 8:30. My flight was scheduled to take off at 1 a.m. So I had a little bit of lag after all that. You know, Denver is a long way from downtown to the airport. It's about damn near 40 minutes. But the two-hour delay, which means as opposed to getting home at 5 a.m., I got home at 7 a.m. So, I'm running off of adrenaline right now. But, Gary, did you see the game last night? I should be running off of adrenaline with the clinching Game 7 Western Conference semifinals. I'm sure if you're listening, you all saw it. The Nuggets had a 20-point second half lead, a 15-point halftime lead. They just ran out of gas. Jamal Murray ran out of gas. Nikola Jokic ran out of gas. And the Minnesota Timberwolves walked their behinds down. Gary, just like I know how I felt watching it from the arena, and of course, when you're going to feel a certain way being in the atmosphere. But when you watched it, Gary, what did you see?
Yeah, I just saw a Denver team that just seemed like all of the hoopla, obviously winning the title, partying all summer, coming in, just having being the hunted, and then falling behind 0-2 at home, just all of that. Quite honestly, just caught up with him at halftime, it seemed like. And then Jokic was kind of resorted to shooting three-pointers. Murray looked two steps slow. And as I think everybody's been concerned about Denver was, well, what are the rest of the guys going to do when those two guys are kind of slowing down? And the answer last night was absolutely nothing. I mean, that was, that was not a good performance from Aaron Gordon, Michael Porter Jr., Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, all those guys. That was I'm trying to quantify it to like a music group where the lead singer is doing everything and the other dudes are just sitting there trying to do the stay on beat. Like, that's just kind of how it was. Like, every now and then, some other member's got to sing a song, right? He's got to, Michael had his Jermaine, right? There was nothing that those guys did. And then you could feel Minnesota kind of sensing vulnerability, smelling blood. And those guys are so deep. And you just tell that they felt like, okay, this is our game. that run, that what, 12-13 run, after it was 58-38, you could just see Denver saying, this is all we got.
Yeah, I think, for one, when Jamal Murray, you know, emptied the tank in the first half, you're looking around and you're like, man, if he's got nothing left, Denver has nothing left. And, you know, just to do a quick reset, for the sixth straight year, we're going to have a new champion. We have not had a repeat champion since the 2017-18 Golden State Warriors. And for the first time that I can remember, now I don't have a stats and information guru or anything like that, but for the first time I can remember, Gary, this will be the first Final Four, the first conference finals on both sides, where you don't have a current or present most valuable player. So I feel like, in some ways, we've been talking about changing of the guard for the past 3 or 4 years with Steph and KD and LeBron, and saying, okay, when is someone going to take the mantle? When is someone going to knock these guys off of the stage? Technically, they weren't quite knocked off in the way that we wanted them to be, but they're just not the last dudes standing anymore. They're not the dudes that are sort of, Gary, they're not the standard that you have to go through to get to where you want to get to. And now you see Minnesota, you said it, they were built to beat Denver. They were built by Tim Connelly. They got all those 7-footers. You got all those long, rangy wings. And now I'm looking at them, and we're going to get to Boston, of course, in a minute. Gary, they're by far, to me, the most complete team in terms of like depth and everything else. I don't feel like there's a more complete team left out of the Final Four.
Yeah, I think it's a good point, Rene. I think Minnesota, but I ain't going to lie, did Minnesota go into camp saying, we're going to make the Western Conference Finals? Probably not. I think they probably went into camp and said, we want to get past the first round. We want to be a factor in the West. No one picked Minnesota to be the tie with the best record in the West. No one saw this coming, because in previous years, Minnesota's been a team that's known to be choked. They have players who couldn't come through. Obviously, the Rudy Gobert thing was considered a failure for the last couple of years. Karl-Anthony Towns was, you know, is he a star? Is he not? Is it time for him to move on? Ant-Man was great, but it's like, is that enough to carry this team? But just like you said, just the personnel that they've added, the Mike Conley acquisition, man, that's been guys like Kyle Anderson, McDaniels is just a, I've always liked his game. I think, you know, he's just one of those guys that somewhere along the line, he's going to get really paid because that dude does a lot. You know, Nikhil Alexander Walker, all those guys fit in the roles. And as much as I think Chris Finch has been criticized, and was he the right coach and choice, you know, coming from Toronto, he has put those guys in positions to all succeed. Even Rudy Gobert, you know, and obviously Rudy gets his share of heat. So I do think Minnesota is probably the most complete team. Them or Boston, those two teams played two very good games during the regular season. So those are the two finals. It's going to be a great series. I think it went to overtime in Minneapolis early in the season, and it went down to the wire in Boston a couple of months later. So those two teams, I think, are pretty even. But you got to give Minnesota credit here. I mean, because – follow behind 3-2, losing 3-0. They could have mailed it in. And they definitely could have mailed it in for game 7 at Denver, because what you're looking at is a defending champion playing at home. They didn't fall behind by 20 points. But you've got to give all those past, you know, skeletons of just being a choking team, a team that can't play well in the clutch, a team that doesn't ever have enough, a team with all these lottery picks that can't ever put it together. Those days are over. I mean, Minnesota's a factor.
Gary, you touched on so much there. And I think Minnesota's resilience, you know, just from being in the building, feeling like, oh, it's a 20-point lead. You know, we're all sitting in the press box, you know, in that sort of 100 level. It's me, it's Mark Spears, it's Sean Powell, Sam Amick, Dave McMenamin. Like, all of us are sort of sitting up there and conversing. John Krasinski from The Athletic. We're all talking, and we're like, man, they're just going to lay down like this. This is just going to be another one of those games. And they just kept playing. Like, Gary, even when they were down 20, they were doing the right things. You know, I'm like, even Ant-Man, Ant started off like 1 of 6, and then he was 1 of 9. But we felt like he was doing the right things. A couple shots, you felt like he was pressing. But by and large, we felt like he was making the right reads. He was still defending. And sooner or later, like, the depth of Minnesota was going to win out over Denver, especially when you look at Christian Brown was the only reserve who played heavy minutes. He played 19 minutes. They didn't go to Peyton Watson. They barely played Justin Holiday, barely played Reggie Jackson. You put a lot on Jokic and a lot on Jamal Murray, who's still on that calf. It just felt like the perfect storm in a way. And I know people want to bang on Denver because maybe you don't like Michael Malone because of how he gets down. I really like Michael Malone. I didn't think he handled the moment in the press conference well. But after that moment, he really opened up. He was really accommodating and answering the questions and actually being vulnerable, which you wouldn't necessarily expect out of someone like that. And here's the other part, Gary, that I don't think people know. Gary, you know that wall that the Nuggets conduct their press conferences at. The wall behind that is the visitors' locker room.
Yep.
So you hear the celebration. Yeah, that's a tough thing to swallow. And everybody wants to dunk on Michael Malone because everything he said about the Lakers. And, you know, if you ever say anything about LeBron James, all of a sudden that makes you a target. But I like the fact that he gave the Nuggets some character. He challenged them. They didn't come through, but he's going to challenge them again this summer. He's probably going to challenge Calvin Booth some too to try to make sure that, hey, the West is getting better and deeper. We can't fall behind.
Totally. And the tough part is you want to know why guys like Peyton Watson didn't play much and Reggie Jackson and Justin Holiday. I mean, they were supposed to step up for Bruce Brown and Jeff Green. I mean, Watson's a kid who's 6'8". He can defend well. He's supposed to be able to kind of knock down the three. Be kind of a McDaniels type, right?
Right, right.
For Denver. And all of a sudden, he's just on the bench being a cheerleader. Like, you have to ask yourself, what happened to their depth? I mean, Brown was supposed to take a real major step forward this year. I don't think that happened. And, you know, they've got to figure out their bench. They got to figure out their depth. Because, as you know, Vinny, Denver's not a real free agent destination. I mean, they're not going to get somebody with a max slot. They're going to have to be creative, use their mid-level if that's available. They're going to have to get some guys in there like they did with a Bruce Brown. But obviously that situation, he was playing the final year of his deal, and it was kind of a show-me contract, and he showed him, and he got paid. So they're going to have to figure out what to do with the bench and give Jokic and Murray some relief, right? And to me, I think they need a legit point guard, maybe another ball handler. I like Reggie Jackson, but is Murray your point? Or is he a two guard? Or can you make, or just, is it too much responsibility for Jokic? Like, are you just putting too much on his shoulder to be ball handler, facilitator, scorer, and rebounder, and decent defender? That's a lot. Even for the three-time MVP. And I said, I do like Mike Malone. He's brought some fire and some swag to an organization that's never really had it. The Nuggets were like the Timberwolves, a team kind of an abyss, like with all this, you know, the Carmelo years with all this talent and King and Martin and George Karl. And they kind of, I think they made the conference finals once, but a team that had been an abyss before he got there. Just kind of one of those, you know, teams. And I think that, honestly, Vinny, the success of the Warriors, because obviously you remember the Warriors before Steph got there, they were a joke, a laughing stock. If you would have went to an average NBA fan or a casual one and said, there's a team in San Francisco, what's that team? Where that at? Where are they at? Golden State, what's Golden State? Like, literally, I lived in the Bay Area. I went to college there. I had a friend who was 6'5", and he used to say he played for the Warriors to get the ladies, and they believed him. They didn't know nobody on the roster. It was like, yeah, okay, you look like you're tall. You look like you played for the
Warriors. Right,
They were 20 and 62. So their evolution into a power is given teams like Denver and Minnesota, because as much as San Francisco is a big market, it was never a vogue place to play. I mean, for free agents, now it is, obviously. But now Denver and Minnesota and Oklahoma City, and now here comes Dallas. Finally, Dallas, after 12 years, comes up. And now they're like a power again. So I think Mike Malone brings that respect, that regard to Denver. They just got to make some adjustments, like you said, with Calvin Booth, and figure out how to become a deeper team, because I just think this year their lack of depth showed.
Yeah, I think, and Michael Malone said that one of his last answers, maybe it was his last answer, he talked about, you know, we couldn't rest our guys down the stretch. We had to play into game 82 to secure, you know, the second seed. And now we're in a luxury tax apron world, second apron world. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's a weird thing. So before, as we're going to put a bow on the other Western Conference semifinal series first, before we get to the Western Conference finals, Gary, did you like the call? The Shea Gilgeous-Alexander foul call on PJ Washington.
No, I didn't like it.
You didn't like the call?
I guess it was a foul, but man, you just got to let, I mean, Washington hadn't hit a shot all night, damn man, you got to let him shoot that. If he hits a three and a quarter contested, tip your cap and walk off the court. Don't give him three free throws and 2 points. Dallas had no idea what the hell he was doing on that final play. That's a tough one. I didn't rub the call. I could see it. And he held on to the ball and didn't release it. So even though he got ball, he also got his arm. But yeah, that's a tough call. That's a tough call. But I also thought Oklahoma City down the stretch missed a lot of shots. I don't know. I don't know what happened to Josh Giddey. Like all this depth and all this young, the good Jalen, not the good Jalen Williams. J-Dub. The scoring Jalen Williams. I didn't see much of him. It was all SGA, man. I mean, I don't, and maybe that's inexperience, but where's all this depth that they had? All these lottery picks, all the Chet Holmgrens and the Giddings and the J-Dubs and all these guys, like, where were they in the fourth quarter when they needed buckets? Because basically they needed to just, they were up seven entering the fourth quarter. And you know, I saw that Jason Kidd interview, and he was just like, oh, we just got to catch him. Like, he did not have any hesitation to think that they were going to catch him. And it just seemed like it became an SGA show, and as much as he's an amazing player, I didn't see the depth there. And maybe I said, maybe that was inexperience, and maybe that's what happens. You take your lumps in the playoffs. No young team goes from, you know, the play-in to the Western Conference Finals. It's really hard to do, or the Conference Finals, but I did not see the depth there. And a lot of dudes kind of took a step back and nudged SGA up there and said, okay, we're just the game, my man. And he almost did it, but he couldn't do it.
Yeah, it's funny. I won't say what coach it was, but there was a coach that I talked to before the playoffs, and he said, and we just brought up Oklahoma City, and he said, put them in an environment where it's 5 minutes left in a not a closeout game, but just a close playoff game. He actually said game one of a playoff series. He said, would I as a coach be uncomfortable playing against them in their own building with their inexperience and 5 minutes left in the game? No, I wouldn't be. And I think even though it was a second round and they were on the road as opposed to being at home in that particular scenario, you could understand. I could totally understand what that coach was talking about and what he meant. And it kind of bared itself out. And you brought out, one of my next point was going to be was Shea had an excellent offensive series there. I felt like when the game got slow, he could still get to his spots and get a bucket. But Oklahoma City needed a second guy who could create double teams, who could create some mismatches and make defenses uncomfortable. Nobody was really able to do that. I don't see where Josh Giddey fits on this team anymore, especially if Shea is going to handle the ball so much. But Gary, we talked about this so much. The Western Conference moves so fast. We can't assume that Oklahoma City is just going to automatically be there. I think they will be in contention, but you can't bank on this stuff from year to year anymore like you used to.
No, because there's teams coming. You know, there's going to be some young teams coming. We don't know what to expect out of Sacramento next year, what the Warriors do in the offseason, what the hell's going to go on in Phoenix. And then maybe even Portland. I'm not talking about Portland. But Portland's going to take a step forward. They got too much young talent not to, right? There's every team. Memphis.
Memphis might get itself back.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, if they get any luck with health, I mean, they had probably one of the worst years in NBA history in terms of health. I mean, you couldn't, all their main players got hurt except Jaren Jackson Jr. So, yeah, you can't bank that that any team in the West is just going to take a natural step, because we had no idea about Minnesota. If you would have said Minnesota would win the West Conference final in October, everybody would have laughed at you. Them clowns, them chokers, hell no. Who's going to be, who's going to do well? What? Cat? What? You know, who's going to win? Who's going to win defensive player of the year? Rudy Gobert? Like, you know, if it was all Anthony, everybody had respect for Anthony Edwards, but the rest of the guys didn't really garner much respect. And Conley was, well, he's getting older. So you just never know who it is that's going to take that step forward in the West. So like you said, you got to take advantage of these opportunities. And I think also Oklahoma City also needs a legit center. They need a big. Holmgren ain't it. You know, and they need depth. And they need guys who can flourish in their roles. And I like Isaiah Joe. I like, you know, Casey Wallace. I mean, I love those guys. I mean, great draft picks. I mean, Sam Presti has done a great job going young. But now you need a vet in there. You need somebody besides SGA to be like, okay, guys, like, this is what we're about to do. This is how we're going to run camp. This is how we're going to be more professional. This is, you know, some of this stuff that y'all be doing with the, you know.
You don't like the group interviews, Gary?
Yeah, like some of this stuff's got to.
I knew that was going to get under your skin. Yeah,
I'm going to go EPMD on you. You got to chill. I mean, you got to chill. I mean, you need an old head in there. It wasn't Gordon Hayward. Obviously, Gordon was not happy with how he did not play. You know, but it's got to be a 30-something or a late 20-something who's had some success somewhere else to say, hey, fellas, like, we're close, but this is how we've got to step up and be more mature, more professional, so you guys can come through in those key moments. Because I didn't see anything out of J-Dub. I didn't see anything out of, you know, Holmgren caught that alley-oop. I didn't see any of those guys besides SGA and say, give me the damn ball. I'm leading us to victory.
Yeah, I thought Chet played well, especially defensively at the rim. I still believe when I see J-Dub, I see a baby Kawhi Leonard. You know what I mean? But you're talking about a guy that's in his second year.
Yeah.
So you're asking a lot for guys like that to compete in a stacked Western Conference. Now, G, before we get to the East and everything else, Western Conference Finals preview. I'm looking at Anthony Edwards, and I'm saying Anthony's going to have to guard either Kyrie Irving or Luka Doncic. And one of those dudes during periods of time, because P.J. Washington is probably going to guard him. He was a pretty big acquisition. Derek Lively and Daniel Gafford really helped transform that team this year. But Ant's going to have to guard one of those guys. One of those guys is going to have to guard him. Jalen McDaniels going to have to guard the other. Like, I feel like this is like a perfectly sort of matched strength versus strength conference finals, if there ever could be one.
Fascinating. Fascinating. And we'll see how much Dallas, they're good. I mean, they're better than I thought they would be. Kyrie has done a complete 180. I mean, that dude's turned into that guy that we all fought. I mean, let's be honest, Vinny. I think everybody loves Kyrie's game. I mean, you can't look at that dude and say, tell, first of all, he's a top 75 player, right? He's just, there's not
really,
there's not 75 players who are playing the NBA that are better than Kyrie Irving. It just isn't, okay? It just isn't, Biddy. I mean,
so you would have put him on the list.
If I had a vote, I would have put him on top 75. You know, and I know that's revisionist history, and it was 3 years ago when he was going through his issues, as we'll say.
Yes.
But
yes,
he's a top 75 player, and this year he played like it. I think he saw the end of the road, because with the league kind of pushing guys out, you know, you look at your DeMarcus Cousins and Dwight Howards and all these perennial former all-stars, and the league is like, yeah, we just don't need your drop anymore. Like, Kyrie was on that list. And I think someone pulled Kyrie aside and said, hey, brother, listen, you're playing for your career now because you're too much of a problem. And the league don't like problems. When you get over 30, you can be a problem at 25. You can't be a problem at 32. You know, you just can't. So Kyrie has gotten himself together. He can still have his personal beliefs and all that. But just be about ball, he lives. So I think that it's a fascinating series, because now you've got the emergence of P.J. Washington, you know, guys like Tim Hardaway Jr., Lively, Gafford. Like, Minnesota's got two legit bigs. And so that's going to be a great series. I don't think there's a favorite here. Like, I don't look at Minnesota and be like, oh, they're better Like Dallas, I didn't think Dallas would beat Oklahoma City, and they had, just after losing game one, they handled them. They won 4 or 5. They figured out a way. And I think Jason Kidd's finally getting the credit as a, you know, I know he's been maligned as a coach. And, I know some people before this playoff win in Dallas that kind of wanted him to go somewhere else, but he's proven to be a good, you know, a quality coach that kind of got them up off the deck after game one. So a fascinating, very even series. And like you said, a lot of the strengths of Minnesota is the strengths of Dallas. And we'll see who guards Luka. How does that go? Who guards Kyrie? Is it, I mean, who's Mike Conley guard? Like, I don't know. Like, is it Kyrie? Is it just all switching?
You're going to hide him. You're going to have to hide Conley.
Is it McDaniels on Kyrie with his length? Is it McDaniels on Luka because of the length? And, you know, and I know, talking to coaches around the league, the way to get to Dallas is you got to make Luka defend. Like, you got to make him defend. You cannot have him take breaks on defense. You got to get him in a little bit of early foul trouble, and you got to get him barking at the refs. You got to go at him. Got to make him play some defense, and I'm sure Minnesota will do that.
Gary, I think you made some excellent points. For one, Jason Kidd is an excellent coach, especially in terms of making adjustments and getting guys to buy in and play defense. Like, I would have never thought that Daniel Gafford and P.J. Washington, two guys who came from losing programs.
Losing cultures,
came in and immediately, when I say immediately, like the first couple of days after the trade deadline, they were in Detroit. And those dudes were mixing it up and roughing it up. Now, granted, that was a dog Pistons team, but they were still invested with their teammates.
I ain't gonna let you talk about the barely Pistons gotten like there. That. I ain't gonna let you talk about the Pistons like that. Go ahead, man.
Gary, this ain't the bad boys. These boys are just bad. All right, they can't even get the lottery right, Gary. They can't even get the number one pick in a year where they lose 28 straight games.
Oh, God, baby.
They haven't earned. And the thing they haven't about earned that, anything for me.
Not just that line. That line just came off the top of your head. They're just bad. Hey, that boy is bad.
They're just bad. The boys is bad. That's all. So,
go ahead.
But Gary, I do think that I would say Minnesota's the favorite. By virtue of beating the champions on the champion home floor, by beating the champions 3 times in the champions building, by coming back from a 3-2 deficit, I think they are the favorites. And I wonder, and you've seen this because you've covered so many playoff series, the emotional high that you're on after beating Denver. You have to rev it back up. You got to get yourself right back in a playoff mindset, in a conference finals mindset by Tuesday. You know what I mean? Like, by tomorrow, pretty much. It's Monday. Like, it takes a lot. These series take so much out of even young teams. And Minnesota's not young. They just have a young best player in Anthony Edwards in that way. So it's going to be an interesting one. I don't know if I'm making an official pick, but I'm leaning towards us taking a trip to Prince's house at some point in June. And you can't do that if the NBA Finals are in Dallas. That's all I'm going to say, Gary.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. We might be in Paisley Park in June. And it's going to be nice weather. I think people are like, oh, it's Minnesota. But no, I think it'll be, you know, it's going to be okay.
I've been there. I'm there already. I mean, not there right now, but I've been there for the conference semifinals. There wasn't a bad day. You know what I mean? 70 degrees and all that type of stuff. If you give me decent weather, I'm going to be good regardless. Convenience, nice weather. That's all we really care about. Some eye candy too, but Gary's married. He can't say those things. I can. Now, we're going to take a quick break. And after we come back, we're going to talk about the Knicks and Pacers Game 7. And we're going to preview the Eastern Conference Finals featuring the Indiana Pacers and Gary's Boston Celtics. And I'm going to ask Gary about his relationship with Joe Mazzulla since I went viral. Gary like going viral. You're listening to The Good Word right here on Yahoo Sports. Back here on The Good Word, Gary Washburn from the Boston Globe joining me today. G, I watched the early part of that Indiana-New York game yesterday. First off, after watching a whole pregame show that only looked like the New York Knicks were playing against the New York Knicks, I didn't know who they were playing against
I didn't know
in Game 7. Apparently, the Indiana Pacers took that as disrespect. and they decide to go out there and kick the Knicks' ass. Now, before we go to the Pacers, we are going to give the Knicks something, and this is what I'm going to give the Knicks. I'm going to ask you this, Gary, because you've been around Coach Tibbs. I've been around Coach Tibbs when Tibbs coached in Chicago. All the bodies that come up, I won't say bodies come up missing, but body parts come up missing, right? You know what I mean? Like hamstrings, ankles, Jalen Brunson's hand. Is it fair that we look at Tom Thibodeau and his teams consistently breaking down the stretch of seasons and pointing the finger at him? Or all these all like coincidences that just so happened to have him as head coach?
I don't think it's a coincidence, but I don't think everything should be on him. What Julius Randle landed on his shoulder on a drive, I think in a collision. I can't remember who it was with.
Miami. It was against Miami.
Yeah, I think it was like, I want to say it was like Duck and Robinson. I can't remember who it was.
Yeah, the thing's Duck and Robinson.
Yeah, then that's not his fault. Brunson hitting his hand on the knee of Halliburton. Some of that's happenstance, but the Ananobi hamstring, yes. Mitchell Robinson's ankle probably coming back a little too fast from his previous surgery, yes. Didn't see the Bogdanovich injury, but him, I don't know. I do think he runs his players really hard. There's a reason why in this today's NBA, you play your best players 34 to 35 minutes max. You don't play them 38, 39. MJ played 39. Magic played all those. The greats played 39, but this is not that era. It's a more demanding game in terms of like the 3-point line. Everybody's running out. Don't know if it's more physical, but I do think you just
scientifically. You're covering more space.
Yes. Scientifically, medically, you just can't run your guys like that in a March home game against, you know, your bad boy or boy band Pistons. You can't do that. And so I think this is kind of what happens with Tibbs. This is kind of Tibbs' history. And the question is, this is why he's had two previous jobs, Minnesota, Chicago, is because eventually it runs dry. Eventually it goes out and it wears on people. The grading style, the yelling, it just kind of wears on people. The question is, how long before it wears in New York? And like we talked about the West, to sit there and say, oh, well, all the Knicks need to do is to get everybody healthy, and they'll be ready for next year. Well, the Rockies thinking the same thing. Miami is going to get probably trying to go over Donovan Mitchell. They're thinking the same thing. There's a bunch of teams. Philadelphia is thinking the same. There's five teams who are saying, as soon as we get healthy, we be good next year. We're going to make a run. So join the group if you're the Knicks. So I credit them for playing. I mean, they just play so hard. I mean, yeah. I think it's a great fit. I've always liked Josh Hart, you know, yes. Bounced around LA, New Orleans, Portland. And he's found a home. DiVincenzo's found a home. We'll see what happens, how it blends in with Randle. Brunson, I'm one of the three that voted him second for MVP. I just thought he did masterful things this year with the Knicks and winning a team that didn't have a whole lot of top-end superstar talent to the number two seed. But you got to think there's something to do with Tibbs and those injuries. And they got to figure out how to get more depth. And then they made those moves. They got Alec Burks. They got Bogdanovich. Like, they really invested. But they've got all these first-round picks. New York's kind of now a destination place. Let's see what they do in the offseason.
Yeah, they got the cap space, too, because you have Brunson on an affordable contract. Of course, I'm sure he's probably going to be up for an extension this summer and get fully maxed out. And as Gary mentioned, Gary likes voting for New York players for MVP. He just has a thing for voting for New York guys for MVP. That's an inside joke. Now, Gary, to the Tibbs point, Gary grew up in Inglewood, which means Gary is a natural born and bred Lakers fan of the Showtime era. Now, Gary, when the Lakers swept through the Western Conference in 1989, right, they went 11-0. They had all that time off because Detroit was battling Chicago in the Eastern Conference Finals. Pat Riley put his team through a strenuous sort of training camp thing. Yeah. He wanted to keep his team sharp. They were going for three straight championships. Gary, tell me what happened. Who popped the hamstring?
Magic. I mean, Magic and
Byron.
Yeah. Like, yeah, they were done. Kareem was on us. Like, that was a team that was done. And might not have been the best decision for Riley to put him through kind of a training camp, boot camp kind of thing to get them ready for the Pistons when they were old, you know, in terms of just, you know, Worthy was in his prime, but Kareem was obviously his final season.
Right.
Magic was, you know, team lives in.
He's still Magic.
Yeah, he was still Magic, but he was team lives in. And then the Byron Scott thing caught him off guard. But yeah, they just weren't ready. It was Detroit's year, but you're right. Like, that's exactly what happened. They got pushed to the break, and then they snapped in that 89 series.
And my point of bringing that up was Byron Scott, he popped his hamstring first. Then Magic popped his. But Scott actually popped his hamstring before the series started. He didn't even play a game in the 89 finals. Magic popped his in the third quarter of game two, and that basically ended whatever chances that the Lakers might have had. They would have lost the series anyway. I know Laker fans hate hearing that, because the Lakers Laker fans will never think they lose a series. They just think either they get cheated or Michael Malone like pulls the Buffalo Wild Wings thing or something like that. And, you know, the sprinklers come out. You know, that type of thing. But I say that to say this with Tibbs. I don't think, Gary, there's any one injury that you can really, maybe your heart's abdominal strain comes from overusage. Maybe OG's hamstring, and he shouldn't have had his ass out there at all.
That was bad.
I don't know what they saw, Gary, in the warm-ups and the lead up to game seven, but he shouldn't have had him out there, especially being an unrestricted free agent. Even if you got some type of, you know, handshake deal going on or whatever, you can't put any one real injury on Tibbs. Like, that's the micro macro argument, but you can put the totality and say, what is it culturally that's going on that even though none of these injuries feel like overusage, I don't know what injury does feel like overusage. I'm not a scientist in that way, but when people say, hey, man, you got to scale it back, and Tibbs says more, 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 and these injuries keep happening, yeah, I do have to look at you a little bit, and then I have to look at you and say, even though you have the cap space as the Knicks and you have Madison Square Garden and the visuals and it looks great and all that, who's going to want to come and play for you?
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, we saw that poll that he's the coach that people players would least like to play for. And I also think, too, Vinny, you got to trust your roster. Like, you went and got Shake Milton, who I've seen have good moments in Philadelphia. He never saw the court. Like, when you're thin, you can't run the guys who – you can't, like, not mistrust half your roster. Like, you've got to figure out a way to play Jericho Sims. You got to figure out a way to play Shake Milton. You know, they didn't go to Alec Burks, who has had some good times in Utah and with your Pistons, and he's had some moments. He can score. They didn't play until they absolutely had to. And I just wonder about Tibbs and trusting his roster, not only the injuries, but just going like, okay, I only trust you about 70 of y'all, so all y'all going to play 48, and the rest of y'all is going to watch. Like, that can't be. You've got to trust the guys that Leon Rose has brought for you. And I know Bogdanovich got hurt, but the Alec Burks thing, I couldn't figure out. Like, I think he's a useful NBA player. I think Shake Milton is a useful NBA player. I've seen Jericho Sims at moments. Now, he might not be the best defender, or might not be the highest basketball IQ, but the dude can jump out of the gym, and he's just sitting there. And you need rim protection. Press is a chewer. You need to play him until you have, like, you've got all these bodies because the Knicks and the Anunoby trade got bodies, right? And then Tibbs made the decision, I got to get rid of Emmanuel Quigley. He wanted Quigley out of there. He got Quigley out of it. Okay? They got it. They got to get rid of R.J. Barrett, right? They got R.J. Barrett all it. So you got OG, but you also got another guy you could use who's played in big games and press is a chewer. Like, why doesn't he trust half of his roster? And especially when you got a mass unit of injuries, you've got to try some things. And he didn't try anything, and it wore Josh Hart out. It wore his guys out in the end. You might have been able to squeak out the Indiana series if you'd have used your depth. We might have been able to win that series in six. But especially when in the first two games. You might have been, able to squeeze one of those games in Indiana. And then, you know, Memhart hits a 30-footer. If you know, that changed the whole series. But to me, Tibbs has got to figure out who he trusts or get guys on the roster and maybe collaborate with management of getting guys that he trusts. Because obviously, Shake Milton sat there. And if I'm like, I've seen these guys. We've seen these guys around the league. They're not great players, but they're serviceable NBA players. And when your team is on the edge, you've got to use those guys to try to steal some minutes, give guys a break. You cannot play Josh Hart 48 minutes. You just can't. And then what happens? He gets a muscle pull. Abdominals, like, you can't run these guys into the ground like that because you don't trust half your roster. You got to give him a shot at least.
Yeah, it was such a weird thing. And I do give Tibbs credit because I feel like, to some degree, he switched up his defense and how he coached in Chicago and Minnesota. Like, it's a new NBA. You can't just overload one side of the floor because teams only have one shooter on the floor. Like, I felt like his defense has evolved. I felt like even though his offense was still heavy ISO, I feel like there was an evolution there. And the Knicks are going to break him off. They're going to pay him, you know, $10, $12, $15 million there because they finally have an identity and they feel like that they have something, you know, sustainable on the sideline, sustainable on the floor, players in general who will play for him, and Brunson, Hart, DiVincenzo. I'm curious what they're going to do with Julius Randle and the rest of those guys. I think they have to handle Hartenstein's free agency because
yeah, he's a free agent.
I think as a second round pick, they don't have the bird rights on him. So that's going to be a tricky situation, but I think they need to retain him. Enough for the Knicks, because I just cracked on ESPN for talking too much Knicks, and we just sat up here and talked the Knicks. But Gary, the Eastern Conference Finals will begin this week. Celtics, Pacers, in other words, the Larry Bird Memorial Series. I'm not sure who Boston is going to root for when you put Peyton Pritchard out there against TJ McConnell. I'm not sure which of those athletic giants who are naturally gifted the world of Boston is going to root for. I wish I could be there. I wish I could be there if it's a Dallas-Boston NBA final. Boston would lose his mother Evan loving mind if they had to deal with Kyrie Irving for a 7-game series. That's a story for another day. But let's go, Gary. How do you see this series playing out? Because Boston was 3-2 against Indiana this year, the in-season tournament game included, which is why it's 5 games instead of 4. Is this going to be another cakewalk like the first 2 series? Or do you see Indiana really giving Boston a run, or just Boston playing with their food for a little bit?
Yeah, I think that Indiana has enough talent to win 1 or 2 games in this series. If you look at the season series, it's kind of a deceiving because the 55-point win, Haliburton didn't play that game. And then two of Indiana's wins, one of the main contributors was Buddy Hield, who's, you know, chilling in the Bahamas right now in his offseason. So it's hard to kind of determine, like, match them up because they played so off. They played like a lot in the first few months of the season, and both teams are dramatically different. Now, the question is, especially Indiana can score with anybody. We're going to want to win every game in this series 135, 125, but they don't defend, and they have lapses of just where they just don't. In that New York series, they just look at times uninterested. Like, some of those stretches was like game 5 back in New York, like they just look like we ain't got nothing left. Like they're up 10 at halftime and he just gave up a run. Like, I was disappointed to see Indiana's mental makeup. Like, impressed that they put shot so well in game 7, but the Knicks literally cut that game to 6 and then Brunson breaks his hand. Like, they could have lost that game even though, and they only, if you shoot damn near 70%, man, you should win the game by more than 20 points. Like,
absolutely.
I am not impressed with the mental makeup of the Pacers. I do think, as our friend Bobby Porter said, they kind of are front runner. But they can make it interesting because they can score. Miles Turner can knock down threes. Haliburton, when he's engaged and playing well and aggressive. TJ McConnell is a complete pest. I mean, he's a guy that just annoys everybody, but you want him on your team. Obi Toppin can hit threes. But I just don't think they defend well enough. And I think the Celtics will figure out a way to defend the three-point line to make them have to take contested and tough two. And that's the thing. Like, Indiana is not going to compete unless they can knock down Penny. So it could be a three-point contest. And I don't think Indiana focuses enough on defense. I think they played barely enough defense to win the New York series. But DiVincenzo and Brunson all got their shots off. Like, DiVincenzo, like, they left. How many times has that dude left open? I mean, so to me, I think it's a five, maybe six-game series. Depending on how Indiana comes out, game one will be interesting. Plenty of rest for the Celtics, 6 days off against a team that's just gone through a seven-game series. Is it good? Is it the team that's going to be fresh or the team that's going to be hot coming off a win? So we'll see. But I just don't think Indiana defends well enough. And I just think those mental lapses, you can't commit those against the Celtics. And I think the Celtics are kind of, no one's really talked about them this offseason, I mean, playoffs, because they beat up Miami and that, you know, without Jimmy Butler, and then they took care of Cleveland. So I think they're motivated. I think they're rested. They're a little pissed. And they're ready to make this. They're ready to get back to the finals. And they know that. And I think they have a method of how to beat Indiana. They just can't let it turn into, like, you know, they can't let it turn into a Loyola Marymount game. You cannot just let it turn into a game where nobody's defending and it's just freewheeling. And Indiana is very good at getting their opponents into that type of game.
Well, see, Gary, you said that, I'm going to get this correct, you said that Indiana could be front runners, right? Gary, you cover the Boston Celtics. If they ain't the most front-running team in the league. Now, I'm going to ask you this, Gary.
I agree.
Because you and Joe Mazzulla have this Tom and Jerry relationship, like the cartoon. Y'all go back and forth in press conferences. Where do you and Joe Mazzulla stand right now? Are y'all good, or is it after one of those weird, wacky playoff games, you go back into hammering him and he can't handle it?
We're good. I mean, I think we have a respect for each other. I do think he reads everything. He understands what's been written about him and the team. I think a lot of that stuff he takes personal. I think he's been told not to read everything, that will drive yourself crazy. But I think Joe, as Drew Holiday said yesterday, is a little crazy, and he's an unusual coach, and he's a fiery personality, and he wants to prove everybody wrong. So I respect that out of him. We're fine, but obviously if they lose and I have an issue or I have a question, I'm going to challenge him. And if he doesn't like that, that's not my real issue. My issue is to be respectful in what I ask and ask an intelligent question. And that's what I try to do every time. And if he doesn't like the question, that's just, that ain't my problem. We've all been in, you know, covering this league. We all, if you haven't ever had a clash with a coach, then you really haven't done your job. You just haven't. If a coach rubs all your questions and is, you know, patting you on the back and saying, like, if that's the case, you really are doing your job. There's going to be times, like the guy who asked Mike Malone that question, where you could say, well, it's, you know, that's a dumbass or he's stupid-ass question, what he said or whatever, but it was a necessary question. And sometimes you got to ask the necessary and kind of obvious questions and let the coach kind of go off. You've got to draw that out of them. You've got to ask hard questions. I think we're in a NBA media where a lot of reporters, and you know those many as well as I do, are not afraid to hide their fandom. And that wasn't the case. And you came up after me, many years after me, but I don't think it was like that when you were, you know, covering the league in the late, you know, when you were started coming to the league in like 2009, 2010, I don't think it was like that as much. But now we've got reporters basically openly rooting for their team or openly saying, this team's amazing, or I love these guys. And the fans are, oh, that's great. Oh, he's one of us. And I ain't one of us, because my job is to cover this team the best I can and be unbiased. My job is not to root for the Celtics or being Joe Mazzulla's best buddy. We have a healthy respect for each other. And I think that's what should be the responsibility. The coach should respect you and know that you're going to hold him accountable. And if he has an issue with me, I want him to hold me accountable too. So I think that's where we stand. And we're good, you know. And we'll see what happens. If they win the championship, I'm sure our interaction will be very interesting. If they don't, I'm sure it will be very interesting. So we'll see what happens in the next couple of weeks. But I like Joe. I think he's a good man. I think he's a good coach, but he's only 35 years old. And that's very...
What you trying to say, Gary?
That's very young for an NBA coach, Vinny. I know that's younger than you are. So now, you know, you got coaches younger than you. I know that makes you feel some kind of way.
No, it don't. I ain't tripping on none of it. I ain't never told nobody my age, for one. And who even said that Joe Mazzulla was younger than me?
We don't know.
We don't know.
Marcus was with Wayne Eloise. We do not know.
He had a chit-chat. He had a chit-chat with Lady Eloise.
We don't know if I was with Lady Eloise. We don't know if Vinny's older than Joe Mazzulla, but he's going to be a great coach, but he's very intense, and I understand it. I respect that, but I also have a job to do.
So, one more thing before we go, because Gary's been great with giving us his time today. The thing about clashing with coaches is absolutely correct. I had one coach who I covered, and I covered a lot of them, that he was so frustrated with me. He ran into the office after, you know, he had like a media session with us. It was after a practice in a practice facility. And he was venting to like the secretary and venting to the general manager. And someone came back to me and said, "What are you doing to him?" And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" And he says, "Coach Blank says, Vinny thinks he's the coach." And I said, "Oh, okay. Well, I guess I'm doing something right." I know you like that, and I'm sure I'll text you who it is after we get off. But Gary, two last things before we go, you can answer it all in one. Jason Tatum has not had a great postseason.
No.
You know, he's only had 2 30-point games, which I don't think is a barometer for how well you play, but he's only had 2 games where he shot over 50%. He's upped his rebound, and his defense looks good, but does he need to step his game up, especially in the absence of Porzingis, to ensure or to get the Celtics over the hump, not just past the Eastern Conference Finals, but into a good showing in the finals? And secondarily, G, if the Celtics don't win this NBA championship with no Denver Nuggets in their way, no Miami Heat, no Milwaukee Bucks, no Philadelphia 76ers, should this season be considered a failure?
Answer your second question. Yes, it should be. It's been laid out. I think if you would have said the last 3 remaining teams are Dallas, Minnesota, and Indiana, I think the Suns would have taken that 10 days out of 10. You know, it's no disrespect to the other 3 teams, but they were trying to prepare for a Denver final. They were trying to figure out, they're prepared for Indiana, they prepared for Cleveland, prepared for Miami. Don't believe, they were trying to figure out how to stop Jokic. They were trying to figure out how to stop that pick and roll. They were trying to figure out how to get Aaron Gordon out of the dunker spot. They were trying to figure out how to stop those plays, believe me, already. So now they've got to focus on Minnesota and Dallas and obviously first Indiana. But I think they feel comfortable with their role. They know this is ours to lose. They're going to be the prohibitive favorites, obviously, in this series. Whatever team they play the finals, Minnesota would be a slight favorite, but they have home court advantage. If they get Porzingis back soon, and I think he'll come back in the next week or so, they'll be healthy. So, yeah, it is theirs to lose, really, and it will be considered, I don't know, a failure is strong, but losing in the finals would be another blow and another what the hell do we do now? And then with Tatum, I don't know if it's much. Tatum's got to be score 45 a game, but Tatum's got to be more efficient. He's got to be better from the 3-point line. He's got to be just that attacker.
He's shooting like 29% or something like that.
26%,
from 3.
I want to say. And he's trying to get his shot together during games. He's trying to go outside in. What I mean by that is he's trying to use the 3 to open anything else up. He's trying to get himself going from the 3-point line. So he starts out 0-for-5. And he's got to get himself going in other ways, whether it be just getting to the free throw line, getting to the rim, the mid-range. He's a very good mid-range shooter. And just all that will open up. But he's just not had a great 3-point shooting season. I think he was 37% this year. He was 35 last year, I want to say. So, I mean, he's got to be better overall offensively. Defensively, he has been good. Rebounding, he's been good. He has done a lot of the little things and made himself a complete player. I think, like Ant-Man said, like, I can do more than score. He said he shut down Jamal Murray in the second half, and he rebounded. And as much as he was 6-for-24 last night, Ant-Man did little things to help his team win. And Jason feels the same way. I just think all he wants to do is win a damn championship. And that just brings a load off of his shoulders as far as being a star player, an all-time great Celtic, you know, because none of those guys who have their numbers retired in Boston, all of them dudes won championships, all of them. So Jason knows if I want that zero lifted, I gotta define myself by winning. And so the pressure's on him, the pressure's on this team, and we'll see how they react, because I think they fully understand the high expectations.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is my man, Gary Washburn. Gary, I think, if they don't win it, they need to have some serious discussions about the makeup of this roster, because they built everything around Tatum and Brown. You have all these different iterations, different point guards, different centers, different coaches. And if this is the year that you don't get it done with the way that this league is going, you're going to have to ask yourself some really difficult questions, and you may not necessarily like the answers. But that, ladies and gentlemen, is Gary Washburn. Gary, man, I really, really appreciate you, man. Go and enjoy Celtics practice. Give Joe Mazzulla, just give him a break today. Don't hammer him until, like, game two. How about that? Can you ease up on him until, like, off, you know, a couple days?
Exactly, Billy. I'll hold off till game two. Man, then I'll end up having it.
Thank you, G. Thank you, G. That's Gary Washburn. Thanks again, Gary, for joining us. That is all that we have for you on today's episode of The Good Word. Thanks to producer Colin, who's in for producer John, and the entire team who works hard behind the scenes on this show. We'll be back on Wednesday with Wednesdays with Tom Haberstroh. Until then, everybody be safe.